You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sun Jogal, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you don't have time for college, let the college come to you via the Internet. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sun Jogal.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avvalv.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is the residual value of business continuity investments. Our guest for today's show is Joe Rickard. Joe is the CTO and a partner of Chicago-based InCapital LLC. And InCapital is recognized as a technology leader in financial services, with current new bond issues exceeding $130 million per week. Joe is also the co-founder of Offsite LLC, a business continuity campus in Kenosha, Wisconsin, specifically designed to meet the regulatory requirements of both financial services and healthcare. The facility is managed similar to shared executive offices, where firms have suites dedicated to their people and equipment. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
How was your week?
That was good. Very, very busy. Very busy.
I'm busy as usual, right?
That's right.
All right, so let's look at the investment side of the business continuity. As we know, I mean, you talk about business continuity or disaster recovery services, which are offered by different service providers, of course, and customers who are primarily organizations, they invest in it, but mostly as an insurance. What are your thoughts about this approach to investment?
Well, I definitely have taken a different approach than viewing it as insurance. We clearly are looking at this as business continuity, not disaster recovery, which means we've created a HOT or MIR site, which actually adds additional production capacity to our infrastructure.
Okay. Now, when you say that, you know, you have an additional capacity, let me ask you this. Would anybody as an organization, or any organization for that matter, would ever go and try to use that spare capacity when everything is going, you know, as usual? Because if they really had to extend their facility, they would actually go out and expand it in their own premises, or maybe go and get another office, but not pay the premium of your executive suites.
I believe that I know we do this at InCapital, which is an investment bank. We often will switch over to our MIR site up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the off-site facility, for regular maintenance schedules. So we have a model where we have active data center and a passive data center. So really, we're always swapping between the two, actually flipping production from one facility to the other.
So
I don't know if that answers your question.
No. You are saying basically that there is more use to a business continuity, you know, place where you have actually set up your site for business continuity. That is more, that could also be used for your regular maintenance schedules, as you rightly said. However, do you think the companies who are working on a large data center environment? I mean, you might have an operation which could very well be replicated in a smaller location. And then, you know, still you can continue your operations. And I know to some extent I see business continuity is not only limited to, you know, having a bunch of servers, putting them someplace and having the things working, but how about an insurance claim services or financial claim services, or I don't know what exactly a good function that we can pick up in financial services, which is very, along with having the systems and processes in place, you also have a lot of manual labor or manual intervention involved in there.
Well, that's a very good point. The SEC came down with a new ruling that says firms that are regulated by them have they must have a recovery time target of 4 hours for their business. And they draw a very clear distinction there. They're not saying your data must be safe or recoverable. They are saying you have to have human beings making trades, clearing trades, talking to customers, all within a four-hour time target. So that's a good thought. It's not, business continuity is certainly not about technology. It certainly involves technology, but that's not the most important thing.
So coming to my point about like saying, and again, not basically pinpointing to your facility, I'm just talking about any business continuity investment that a company does. They will be able to some extent use that as an extended facility where they can go and do some extra work. And in case they had to, for extension sake, it's fine. And in case of a disaster, it's fine. But on a regular basis, they could not, plug out, just pull the plug on the original facility and go to this extended facility and resume work as if nothing happened. And they have the same level of scale that they could experience in their primary facility. So that I do not know whether it is possible 100%, but of course, in case of a disaster, yes, what you're saying makes sense, that you also provide them a place to sit, maybe a desk and a couple of phones and, whatever they need, a printer and a scanner and a copier, along with the machines so that they can start doing their work.
I think what firms do, firms are using the facility today do,
mm-hmm.
is they pick and choose different business processes and assign criticality levels to each business process, and they then put, like in the offsite, they'll have dedicated chairs with dedicated workstations ready to trade securities for their most critical traders. But for less critical processes, like customer service, they might have a 24-hour recovery time target, and they might not have dedicated space. They might have, wherever they find room for them later on. So I think it's really important for companies when they're approaching business continuity and trying to figure out how much money to invest in it, it's really important that they identify their different business processes, the criticality of each process, and then approach each of those processes individually and see how recoverable they are.
And to an extent, that was my next question, is that how much is enough? A company can just put an arm and a leg into just building this facility, but how much is enough to get that insurance or to get that good sleep at night, that yes, if something happens, I can go and get my trades done properly, and anything that I used to do as a regular business will be able to carry it out.
Okay, I think the first question each business unit owner needs to ask is the revenue for my business unit, if we go offline and we can't do business, is this deferred revenue or is this lost revenue? That's a very important thing to understand and recognize the difference between the two. For a company like InCapital, if we can't issue bonds for a day, that is lost revenue. It will never be recovered because people won't come back tomorrow when we're up and open for business. They will just fund through some other means. So for us, it's clearly lost revenue. We will spend a lot more. We can justify spending a lot more on business continuity than companies that might have deferred revenue. Now, an instance of deferred revenue might be if you're an insurance company and you can't process some paperwork for 24 hours, that might be deferred. It doesn't have a direct impact on the financials of the company. It'll be a hardship certainly, but it won't directly hurt the financials.
That's a very good point. And let's look at the disaster recovery business versus business continuity. People surprisingly always mix the two. And whereas disaster recovery is just to, come back from where you were, and meanwhile you're trying to do that, at least your business continues, and that's business continuity if I'm right. And if you were to look, the disaster recovery has a pull-the-plug test, but business continuity doesn't. And even if somebody wants to, there's too much of inertia and comfort level, and not to rock the boat issue, which would actually have no company go in and actually do the pull-the-plug test on business continuity. They would not just walk one day and say, we're going to close this primary office let's have three or four folks go and try to trade when they see money sitting on the table. So if this being a practical situation, how can these processes and procedures related to business continuity could ever be tested that they will actually work in real life when the things actually are needed?
With a solid business continuity plan where you can fail over certain phone lines from your primary facility to your secondary facility, and fail over different processes such as like web-based trading applications or databases you need. If you have each of those set up correctly, you can actually just switch between. You can pull the plug, literally pull the Ethernet plug out of the back of the systems, and within a very short period of time, you can recover in your other facility. And if you're a company that deals electronically a lot with your customers, it might be completely transparent to them, depending on how you have your network set up.
Now, you're talking, again, the technology component. I would look from the more business angle, like, you know, in disaster recovery when they have these, you know, even for that matter, many times when you go to big offices, they would, like you go to Sears Towers, for example, and suddenly they will have a fire drill.
So,
you have a business continuity drill where they say, okay, everything is gone, there's a big disaster, you've got to walk out. So not only the technology needs to recover, but it is also the people have to, you know, go to the right spots which have been assigned, pre-assigned to them, and in case of disaster, this is what you should do. Similar exercise or a drill is never done literally in business continuity. Disaster recovery, still people do it, but business continuity, people don't do a drill. And that's why you would... I mean, there have to be a situation where you actually do the drill for you to find out whether the processes and procedures people have understood them, are they able to follow, while they try to follow, are there any gotchas which we need to take care of? So that was the main question I had. And, you know, of course, there's not a ready answer for it, but that's an important point which somebody has to think about and try to come up with a way so that all companies have to become more cognizant of the fact that they should also do a pull-the-plug test on business continuity and not just disaster recovery.
That's good. What Incapital's been doing is, on a quarterly basis, sending certain business unit people up to the off-site facility. Now, the primary motivation for that is to do a gap analysis. Is everything there that they need to do their job? And we've actually sent secondary market traders up to the Kenosha offsite facility to trade through their Bloomberg systems and answer the phones and take calls and work. It sounds like that's no big deal, but that's actually a very big deal. So on a departmental basis, we've been doing it, but more to analyze to make sure we have everything there. But you're right. We've never done a total, like, our building is inhabitable sort of test. And that would be, or not even a test, I mean, because a lot of companies, when they talk about testing, they never flip production. They just do a test. They go to their DR.
That's what I'm saying. So you do not, it's a practical situation. Why would you want to lose, as you said, in your case, it's like a lost revenue if you were to stop operation for an hour? I mean, there is too much at stake for somebody to say, hey, you know, we just needed to test this business continuity process. That's why we're going to pull the plug on it and let everybody go and drive down to the Kenosha facility. Or for other companies, there might be other places.
Yeah, our hands are tied. We could never have everybody go to our primary site and then at 10 a.m. say, okay, guys, let's go up north. Let's take the Metra up to Kenosha. No, we could never really do that. On a departmental basis, we could do that, or maybe even a partial departmental basis. We'll take up a couple critical employees, have them get comfortable with the facility. And it's designed for that. The off-site facility, there is no concept of declaration like there is with other disaster recovery providers. When someone signs up for the facility, they can use it 24/7 whenever they want. So there's no penalties for testing and using it.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, given the situation, which is a practical one, we could just pray that, you know, when the things actually go wrong, our processes work. And, you know, this is a situation which needs to be dealt with. Maybe some creative solution would need to be devised here. But before we get on to the next question, which is more related to the regression issues that might come up, because the business needs change, and accordingly your risk levels change, and accordingly your processes for business continuity planning should change, the regression review process, is it adopted by organizations, or it is just, you know, done, you know, in a very, we just wing it. So let's discuss more about this when we come back from the break. So please stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix, the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Avval can help your company, visit www.avval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Whether you are out to change the world or the world is changing around you, you need to tune in to Change in Context with Linda Ireland and Chris LeVictor Mahai every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Linda and Chris will bring you topics, tools, and interesting perspectives each week to help you as your business grows into a successful corporation. Once again, that's Change in Context, heard every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is residual value of business continuity investments. Our guest for today's show is Joe Rickard. Joe is the CTO and a partner of Chicago-based InCapital LLC. InCapital is recognized as a technology leader in financial services, with current new bond issues exceeding $130 million per week. Before the break, we were briefly discussing about the situation where there is no set process for anybody to go back and try to figure out how to do a pull-the-plug test. Now, the next level was where, you know, the business needs change, and business continuity processes should change accordingly, at least should be updated accordingly, because, your risk levels would change, there would be other factors which are changing, and more than that, if you change one aspect of the business continuity process, there could always be ripple effects. So what can be done even for regression monitoring in that case? So what are your thoughts, Joe?
I think documentation answers a lot of that, and it's very important to be vigilant in maintaining very, very current documentation. And then how you organize that documentation is absolutely critical. When business units are bought and sold, it's very difficult for business continuity managers to separate dependencies and keep an organized business continuity plan. So, for InCapital, we have a database that it's similar to like a ticket management system, where that outlines these dependencies between processes. I don't know if that does that answer your question.
No, let's look at it from this standpoint. Example: attrition or turnover of employees. Right, mm-hmm. That's one factor that could make a difference. The only reason it would make a difference while your business needs haven't changed, But the training that you had imparted to some of the employees who knew what they had to do, they were replaced by somebody else. They got fired, or they just walked away to, you know, for professional growth or whatever the reason might be. But what is happening here is that you have lost a person who knew what he had to do.
Well, that's where our documentation really comes into place, that we can hand the person that steps into that person's shoes the documents that were prepared, and they're really, it reads like a training manual. This is what your responsibilities are.
So it's like an HR manual which you hand over to a guy at the time of induction?
Exactly, and there might be very sensitive information in that too. For instance, if a critical employee leaves, like a security administrator or a telecommunications administrator, there's lots of information like, is the new employee authorized to switch our toll-free numbers from location 1 to location 2? That's something that gets missed all the time with employee turnover, and it causes big problems if there is an emergency. So that's where those cross dependencies are really important to document.
Okay, so now that was the one point. Second point is when, suppose, a business niche changes. Maybe there's a new offering. Accordingly, you got a new department that got set up, and maybe there were new sets of applications and systems that were bought or altered or upgraded. And then, you know, those things at any given time, and this is like a moving target. So you literally have to have somebody dedicated on just keeping a hawk eye on what's going on and how is that impacting the level of risk that has been introduced in the organization. And all that has to be in some form or fashion put into black and white and say, this is what has changed, and accordingly this is the ripple effect. And because of this change, while we make the change into this department or introduce this new document in there and train more people, there is other ripple effect. So whatever was training as given to the employees who are belonging to the same department or the other, that also changes.
You're touching on an area which is the greatest cause of a plan to fail, because that is the hardest part. No one is pushing the technology envelope by creating a hot site or mirror site. There's nothing really complicated about it at the end of the day. The hardest part is having, how do you document these changes? How do you handle an organization that's in constant state of flux? And that's very difficult.
Is there any suggested process? I mean, like, because we are saying that we have been trying to talk about business continuity and disaster recovery for so many years now. Has some process evolved over a period of time, which nothing is foolproof, we know that, but is there something which at least gives us a way to get your arms around this moving target issue?
Well, if you have a policy in place that can notify the business continuity planners of when a new critical application is adopted or when a business unit is being sold or bought, those are important things. And in a typical large organization, the business continuity planner might read about it in the paper before they hear about it internally. So it's I think it's if you can get buy-in at the CEO level to be able to notify the business continuity planners of changes when they're happening or before they're happening, that would be fabulous. That would help the problem. I don't think there's a really clean answer to this.
So when you're saying that somebody has to take a stab at it, or maybe there is some dedicated set of technology tools or people, for that matter, who are keeping track of what's going on, and they would notify. Now, this is all also going to, other than the botheration and the continuous nuisance of people being bothered, hey, you know what, this thing changed, so you got to learn this new trick of how to do business continuity. There's also a cost factor involved in there, because you are trying to use people, resources, time, and that is affecting the productivity of people who have to get trained. And also there are some dedicated staff. There's some dedicated staff which is taking care of monitoring this change of risk and accordingly notifying the right individuals. So that basically adds to the complexity, and of course it cuts through to the bottom line, and what it is doing is increasing the overall cost of your business continuity effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And oftentimes this is the sort of task that's well suited to be given to an outsourced company, because if you're paying consultants to do this, they tend to get a little more respect internally than a normal employee. it's a painful truth.
I've not been taken seriously about somebody coming and bothering me every now and then.
That's exactly right. I talk to people at very, very large companies in Chicago that run business continuity, and it's a battle for them to get the respect and response from business unit managers. I don't think there's anybody that would say they never have a problem with that. Now, I lost that thought. I was just saying.
No, which is fine. So, I mean, we know that this is an issue where we do not have a right answer as such, but we would say that, you know, these are some of the points which are chronic, and they are, like, you know, pain points for the business continuity planning and deployment. And they have to be somehow, people over a period of time, people have to figure out and just find a way to deal with it. So quickly, let's look at our next question, where we are talking about that we may develop the best plans and documents for business continuity. And in fact, did we not touch this topic about the employee turnover? Yes, I guess, where we did touch and we said the turnover is going to cause a problem. So let's quickly look at the next question, which is, you know, there's a school of thought that preparing for business continuity also allows an organization to streamline its existing processes and make them leaner, if possible.
Yeah,
is that
I have
a possibility?
To agree with that.
Yeah, and... Yeah, before actually we get into this, let's take a very quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and Joe, then we can get deeper into this.
Thank you.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix, the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com on the SurfNet Radio Network, brought to you by SurfNet Media Group, publicly traded under the symbol SFNM. BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Learn how to make money by going against the crowd. Listen to Thinking Outside the Herd, value-based strategies for profitable stock investing with Philip Butz and Adam Herron, every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Philip and Adam will show you how to find and evaluate unique opportunities in the stock market that will enable you to build a portfolio with real rather than relative returns. Improve your portfolio. Stay ahead of the curve. Listen to Thinking Outside the Herd, value-based strategies for profitable stock investing with Philip Butz and Adam Herron, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on Business America Radio.
Your investments make a difference. Each dollar you invest may be changing the future of our planet. Are you investing wisely? Listen to Eco Dollars with Garvin and Maria every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. On the show, Garvin J. Bush and Maria Nilva Potapov will discuss ways for you to make investments that make sense for you and the environment. They will also discuss current spending habits and trends and their effect on the economy. Know what you own. Believe in the companies you invest in. Listen to Eco Dollars with Garvin J. Bush and Maria Nilva Potapov every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is the residual value of business continuity investments. Our guest for today's show is Joe Rickard. Joe is the CTO and a partner of Chicago-based InCapital LLC. InCapital is recognized as a technology leader in financial services with current new bond issues exceeding $130 million per week. We were discussing, or we in fact touched briefly on a topic which says that, you know, there's a fringe benefit of preparing for business continuity, where it also allows an organization to streamline its existing processes and make them leaner if possible. What are your thoughts about this, Joe?
Well, it's like when you move from one house to another, you tend to get rid of a lot of stuff you don't need.
That's true.
When we set up our MirSite, our business continuity facility, we found a lot of redundant applications, processes, and some vendors where we had subscriptions, where we paid pretty heavy monthly fees. We found that we could consolidate those. So that was, you're right, it was a hidden benefit that probably knocked about 10-15% off our overall cost of setting it up.
So you're saying that this is always the case where they can make some processes leaner and meaner, or is this something which just happens? I mean, because there has to be a planning. While people are planning for business continuity, I'm not sure how many people actually plan, in a very, very conscious manner that, guess what, this is going to be a business process reengineering exercise as well.
Well, it probably depends on how good your company is at communicating among each other and departments. Like we had one division subscribing to it's a online publication or data, it's published data, and then another department was also subscribing to it. And what we learned is that we could, both departments could use the same subscription. So there we saved money and also just made the company more efficient. So those are the kind of things that get identified during your analysis to create a business continuity plan.
Well, that's wonderful. Now let's pick up the topic. An area which is the dark side of business continuity, as I call it, because based on that, we actually chose the topic of the show today is the residual value. Everybody invests in business continuity to get sleep at night, and literally no one talks about, you know, what do I get in return? It's almost like a lease on a car. You just use it for some time, and you are getting a good car to drive, and at the end of it, you just walk to the next one, or basically you've got nothing in hand left. And the same is the case with business continuity investment or disaster recovery. But since we're talking about business continuity, let's pick up this point and try to dig deeper. What do you think is a residual value, if at all there is, for any business continuity?
Well, if you're actually able to use your business continuity facility for maintenance schedules and to literally flip the switch and move production over to your business continuity center, then that business continuity center is part of your production capacity. It's part of your everyday, it's a node on your network and you use it every day. Then it should be included in calculations of return on your technology investment. That is clearly different than the disaster recovery model of the big three vendors providing disaster recovery services. You know, they have the concept of twice a year you use a facility for a test. If you need to use it outside of those parameters, you have to pay a very heavy declaration fee. Then it's clearly all just cost. That, in my opinion, is the dark side, and that's how we came upon starting this off-site facility, because it just didn't fit a financial services company like us.
Now, while I mean, in theory, of course, you know what you just said. In a way, not only in theory, but what you're saying in terms of you know providing an extended facility which could be used in terms of spillovers, that might look like a residual value. And the other thing that we spoke about is like you know they can possibly use to streamline their existing processes. So all those things might look good. Have you had a real situation where a company did benefit, and it might be by using your company or outside? You might have heard of some cases where a company actually went and invested in business continuity, but they didn't stop at that. They actually used that as an opportunity to get something out of it.
Well, I would say it's too young to have an example outside of like in capital, which we started for that specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like in capital, we have requirements to store media, optical media, off-site. So we use our facility there to store our records, electronic and paper. So the facility has, all of a sudden we're saving money that we would have been spending with other vendors. So by setting up this facility, not only is it a room full of servers and a bunch of dedicated seats with phones, we have space to put our optical media that we store for regulatory purposes, paper records that we store for regulatory purposes. So that's a residual value.
Okay. And so outside in the world, have there been any cases which would actually allow you to make that as a USP? You know, if you are going out and, you know, selling your business to other organizations, have other companies asked you the same questions about what do I get back and how a company of like service provider like you would actually package your services, not just promising them, yes, you'll get a good peaceful sleep at night, you would also get this, and this?
Well, not to dodge a question, but offsite, we only market through consulting firms. And so usually that's the job of the business continuity planner or a consultant that gets hired to make that analysis. So usually, almost every case, offsite is talking to a professional business continuity planner who knows how to do that sort of analysis.
Okay.
Like a business impact analysis, that sort of thing.
All right. So let's look at the other aspect of, you know, business continuity. Is like we're saying that there's a unique challenge that is posed by outsourcing of business processes to remote locations and to third-party vendors. You know, no matter how well an organization may plan for business continuity locally, the level of control and visibility is not the same with the third party. That there's this, you know, weakest link issue. So how an organization can deal with this weakest link issue?
Okay, well people that have to read stuff like Sarbanes-Oxley and other rules out there about critical processes, what companies are doing now, they're sending out to their vendors critical vendor questionnaires. And that's something I encourage people to develop or have your consulting firm develop. And that should go out to all your vendors. And that way, if you have a vendor, like let's say a market information provider, somebody who's providing like New York Stock Exchange trade records or something, that you would have to know where their backup center is in case they go down. And then you'd have to make sure you have telecommunications processes to swing over to your vendor's backup site. And that's really a critical part of the business continuity engagement and, you know, the part of setting it up. Right? Like offsite, we really stick to the physical layer. We provide the facility. And then the consulting firm would come in and maybe develop this questionnaire, send it out to the critical vendors, even determine which vendors are critical or not critical.
So even when we talk about the physical layer, but still you are deploying the technology there, isn't it? I mean, in terms of servers or the software, and the fact that when we are talking about any kind of compliance issue that somebody might have, and they're saying that,
actually, we don't provide the hardware, and securities companies. They don't want to be subordinate to some provider's security practices. So Offsite was really developed because there's a group of people out there who are regulated that want to put their own firewalls in. They want to make this part of their own wide area network. And each suite for each customer is physically separate. It's a separate network going to each suite. But then they enjoy the benefit of fiber optics pulled in for internet access. They enjoy the we have PRIs, which are our primary their phone lines pulled in. So then there's also a phone switch. So we have some core infrastructure, backup generators. So they don't need to spend that money, but they still will have their own firewalls and manage their own firewalls, or have their incumbent technology vendor manage those firewalls.
Okay, let's take the example of HIPAA, for example, right? So HIPAA says that you're storing your transactions, and the transactions are looked at, or maybe say not only transactions but also patient records. So assuming that not pinpointing your facility, but a business continuity facility is there. What happens is a person's records come and they get faxed, for example, to your premises. And now it's all you are only taking care of the physical side of it. And the patient records come and they are lying on the fax machine. While they have a lock and key, what is the guarantee that is there that a person who is not authorized to look at that fax would actually go and look at that fax and disseminate that information to someone? So I'm just trying to see if, even if, like, especially in case of HIPAA or maybe in Sarbanes-Oxley, I don't know how much of a security issue there, it's more in case of HIPAA. So if we have a business continuity plan and we have a vendor who is a service provider who is providing all the infrastructure, maybe at physical level, they are in some form or fashion a business associate. And they would also come under the whole, you can say, under the gun in terms of providing the assurance that if a fax received here, nobody who is not supposed to see it will not see it.
So we do have multi-layers of physical security.
Mm-hmm.
So within a customer's business continuity suite,
mm-hmm.
they would have a separate room with a separate security codes to get in there. And that ensures that only people who are supposed to have access to that room have access to that room.
Okay.
So that would help with the HIPAA compliance on a physical level.
And you I'm not sure whether your organization has taken care of a healthcare company yet, but if there was a similar situation, then would this not be the case where you would also need to provide a certification that we are complying with HIPAA? Because you would be under the gun on that too?
We don't actually provide the certification. I think there'd be an outside auditor that would come and check that.
Oh yeah, I'm saying, like, in the sense that you'll have to provide an assurance. That's what I mean, is that
we would have a statement.
Yeah, you would have a statement, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to get onto.
Okay,
so let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and just talk about the situation where, earlier the business continuity effort was primarily to just keeping the lights on, but now we are talking about to keep the performance also at almost the same or equal or at least similar levels compared to a non-disaster situation. So how is that done and how realistic is that? So let's take a dig deep into this once we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix is the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.abbal.com today.
Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com on the SurfNet Radio Network, brought to you by SurfNet Media Group, publicly traded under the symbol SFNM. BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Rule number one when investing, always have a strategy. Rule number two, listen to Strategies for Enlightened Investors with Jim Whitten and Lance Alston. Heard every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Strategies for Enlightened Investors will expose investment myths that just aren't true and let you know about financial planning strategies for your future. Become an enlightened investor every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who just tuned in, today's topic is residual value of business continuity investments. Our guest for today's show is Joe Rickard. Joe is the CTO and a partner of Chicago-based InCapital, LLC. InCapital is recognized as a technology leader in financial services with current new bond issues exceeding $130 million per week. Before the break, we briefly touched the topic of keeping the lights on issue, and that was the case when initially business continuity efforts and initiatives were started by organizations. Now what we are talking about is no longer the case. They want to have some things which are as efficient and as well working within the organization. Everybody is able to perform their job in 99.99 kind of percentage as compared to a situation where it was everything was going okay. So given that particular expectation, I mean, while of course management can also put these expectations, which could be unrealistic also, but how unrealistic are these expectations? And if they are, of course, achievable, are we not going to be paying through our nose and, you know, be costing us an arm and a leg? So, and we are also going to be then looking at the ROI factor, because while we talk about, okay, fine, we have a new technology initiative, so we should always talk about total cost of ownership and return on investment. Guess what? This is also another issue where the ROI is equally important. So what are your thoughts about this?
Well, when a company is trying to decide whether it's achieving 99.99% is worth it, I think they need to look at what will the cost be if it's down. And then you don't need to do that all or none where it's like for your entire business, because there are certain processes or business activities which can be more critical and will have a 99.99 requirement. And there are other parts of the business that are less critical and you don't need to spend as much money on. A great example is a trading operation. People that are trading the market actively, let's say you have 12 traders, they need to be back up and running right away. And being back up means they have to have access to their critical trading systems like Bloomberg. And for that, we'll spend almost any amount of money to make sure that it never goes down. But less critical functions, which might be their email. Maybe email can be down for an hour as opposed to being down for 15 minutes. So it depends. It's important to go through this process and decide, like everyone sit around the table and decide, okay, if this is down for 15 minutes or if this is down for an hour or a day, you know, decide what's acceptable.
No, that's great. Now, is it always possible? I mean, I used to always wonder about, like, business continuity planning is such a involved task, is where, you know, you literally go and talk to people and you justify and do analysis and things like that. Like, we as human beings always love to automate things in some form or fashion. Are there any initiatives with respect to building software to help aid the business continuity planning effort and even deployment effort?
I've never really analyzed them. There are like two or three big commercial packages. And I don't work in an organization large enough to justify those systems. So I can't really speak about them. But if you go to like Disaster Recovery Journal, certainly they advertise in there, or Continuity Insights. Those are two publications where you can get a wealth of information on those systems.
And do you think a software for something as subjective or as a moving target, a situation as we have with business continuity planning, could a software really do justice to this whole effort?
I think that good communication between departments, between people, is the most important thing, more important than the software. A lot of people tend to over-rely on technology, in my opinion. And I think the biggest issue to overcome is getting business unit managers to talk to one another and to have a business continuity planner who has the, you know, attention of all those business unit managers.
Okay, let's look from the standpoint of reliance on technology for literally everything that we do now. I mean, I've seen situations when the computer goes down, there are five people. If you go and go shopping and you're standing at that, you know, where they're going to ring you, five people come together and they're trying to do a simple calculation, and then we are totally stuck. Now, that is a typical case where we are becoming very, very vulnerable if the technology, the backbone technology, goes down. So when we say that, while that is also is possible where, you know, the value that is technology bringing to the overall efficiency is great, what can we do from the business continuity standpoint if you literally have an issue where your phone lines are not working or your internet is not working? Because when we say that, fine, we gave them a room and we gave them servers and we gave them all the technology, but guess what? The backbone failed. What do you do about that?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because that actually was a fear of in capitals when, and it ultimately led to the creation of Offsite. We in Capital had its disaster recovery site out in Barrington, Illinois, and when one of our customers was doing an audit of us as a critical vendor, I started re-evaluating everything, and I learned that in doing something called a trace route, looking at internet routes from Barrington and my office in Chicago, both networks were going through the same building in Chicago. It happened to be 180 North Stetson, which is where the Chicago NAP originated. And I realized this was a single point of failure. If that building across the loop went offline, I lose both my disaster recovery site and my primary site. They both go offline. So how do you address that? We decided to address it geographically. We decided to build offsite as far south as possible, while still being able to provision all the communication lines out of Milwaukee, and that created for us something called regional redundancy. And if Chicago goes offline, that facility stays up and running. If Milwaukee goes offline, that facility stays up and running. There's no interdependencies for the public switched infrastructure, which is the phone service, the central offices, nor the power substations.
So you're saying that we are still vulnerable?
Oh, absolutely. If I spoke with a company this week that's interested in moving their stuff up there, and their Mir site is four blocks away from their primary office, which is in the financial district, and I know for a fact that they're going out of the exact same central office. And even to go further, if they were diligent enough to request lines being provisioned out of a different central office, they would probably route through the first CO and then go to the second one. So there's, and that was something that we, a lot of people learned in 9/11 when the big Verizon CO went offline. There were communication lines cut going to all the different COs. So it was really, the infrastructure is complicated. It's difficult to find people who can talk about it, and it's only through years of talking to like technicians and the front lines people have I learned a little bit about it.
That's wonderful. On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would like to thank you, Joe, for sharing your views about how to get best out of the business continuity investments.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Great. Investments in business continuity are not the same as buying insurance, as we already see. They are an opportunity to develop an extended capacity in cases of spillovers. And also, since every organization's risk level are different and that too that they are changing, it is imperative that the corresponding business continuity plans are updated and risk management needs are revisited. So business continuity investments should not be a sunk cost. The corresponding service provider community is suggested to take a second look at their offering so that their customers are able to get the best ROI by leveraging the extended infrastructure. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sanjog All next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. We'll be right back.